is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehisu Ibe in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
They did this because they are losing ground. It is now very difficult to attack military formations.
That's analyst Abu Bakar Sani on the deadly attack on farmers in Nigeria. Details coming up. Also, the UN says refugee camps in Ethiopia's Tigray region have run out of food supplies. And an aide to Ugandan politician Bobi Wine was seriously injured when security forces attacked Wine's car. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The conflict in Ethiopia's Tigray region has pushed tens of thousands of people into refugee camps in Sudan, where aid groups are struggling to provide care. One Tigrayan doctor who fled the fighting has set up a clinic in Hashaba refugee camp in Al-Qadarif, Sudan, from where Naba Mohadin reports.
Internal medicine specialist Daryl Logosh was a well-known doctor in Hemura city in Ethiopia before he fled to Sudan this month. Gush and other colleagues displaced from Ethiopia have now established a small clinic in the Hashaba refugee camp east of Sudan's Al-Qadarif city to help those in need of medical attention. The clinic has no tools to diagnose or shelves on which to stock medicine, yet refugee doctors are eager to help despite challenging circumstances. He says when they arrived here, they realized the need to make a clinic to help their people. The Al-Qadarif State Bureau gave them some medicine to start working, but what they have is essential medication for primary health care. Gush adds that people with acute diseases like tuberculosis, diabetes, heart failure, and HIV have no medications. There is also no laboratory for diagnosis. The Hashaba camp has nearly 16,000 refugees. Women and children represent 70% of the arrivals, according to the camp administration. A 4-meter size room is given to every family, and certain rooms are dedicated to those with chronic diseases. This clinic member notes that many fled Ethiopia without the medicines they require. Gilbert Sadik said, "A lot of people left Humara, Maikadra, Barakat, and Western Tigray. There are many people with HIV, tuberculosis, diabetes, and high blood pressure. They left their drugs because of the war and are without any of their medications." Many international and Sudanese organizations are working to help the refugees' fragile health situation and are calling for a larger intervention. Hashim says due to their work in refugee health care, they noticed a variety of fatal and acute diseases. They are sending a message to international civil society organizations to provide aid and tools so they can protect people and control the possible spread of the diseases. Hashaba camp director Mustafa Anwar is also putting out a call for help. Mustafa says the heavy influx into the camp in the Hashaba region has reached 15,557 amid tough economic conditions in Sudan. He calls on international health organizations to quickly intervene as people are in a state of emergency. Sudanese authorities have reported fewer new arrivals in recent days due to the closure of some borders on the Ethiopian side and the escalating turmoil in the Tigray region. Naba Muhiddin for VOA News, Hashaba Refugees Camp Al-Qadarif.
Also, the United Nations Refugee Agency today appealed to Ethiopia's government to allow it to reach Eritrean refugees in Tigray. The UNHCR says the refugee camp in Tigray have run out of food supplies. The Ethiopian government has said it will create a humanitarian corridor for delivery of aid, but UNHCR says it needs unrestricted access. Today is World AIDS Day. A new report from the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, says approximately every minute and 40 seconds, a child or young person under the age of 20 was newly infected with HIV last year, bringing the total number of children living with HIV to 2.8 million. The report warns that children are being left behind in the fight against HIV. Mavis Ochera in Ghana has more.
UNICEF says HIV and AIDS prevention efforts and treatments for children remain some of the lowest among key affected populations. Its new reports note that in 2019, a little more than half of the infected children worldwide had access to life-saving treatments. That lags behind coverage for mothers. 85% of them get treatment, and 62% of all adults living with HIV are unable to get treated. Shafiq Isaji is a senior advisor for HIV for UNICEF based in New York. He says children have been left behind in the fight against HIV because funders and governments often think the mission has been mostly accomplished because of the perceived success of prevention of mother-to-child transmission. He says the reality is there are still an estimated 150,000 new infections in children each year. Isaji says funding has been cut for global AIDS response in annual aid budgets, so that close to around $1 billion has been lost from over the past few years. The cuts had a significant impact on how some countries carried out programs to fight HIV among children.
So in reality, when you look at children versus their mothers, in Eastern and Southern Africa, for example, something like 92 to 95% of all pregnant and breastfeeding women living with HIV are currently accessing HIV treatment and care. By comparison, if you look at the children, the coverage rate is much lower at around 58%.
Isaji says access to HIV services for treatment and prevention was lowest among marginalized populations who experienced tremendous stigma at home and their communities and in the health facility itself. He says globally, 53% of children living with HIV can get treatment, but in West and Central Africa, only a third of infected children get care. He notes, however, some countries are doing better.
A country like Rwanda that has extremely high levels of coverage for children that are living with HIV. They have good systems for identifying children and for ensuring that those children get onto treatment. Or you could be living in, for example, a region where access is much poorer, where the mechanisms that are needed to be able to diagnose a child as HIV positive are simply not there.
Isaji says statistical modeling indicates that 100,000 children die each year of AIDS. He says the COVID-19 pandemic has exacerbated inequalities in access to HIV services for children, adolescents, and pregnant mothers everywhere. UNICEF has found that access to HIV services dropped as much as 50% in some areas, but the situation has improved as countries ease pandemic lockdown measures and people have returned to their normal lives. Isaji says when pregnant women living with HIV are unable to get treatment, chances are higher they will pass the virus to their unborn babies. He says UNICEF anticipates an increase in the number of new infections and an increase in the number of children dying from HIV because they were unable to access treatment this year. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Ghana.
Ugandan presidential candidate Robert Chagulani, known as Bobby Wine, suspended his campaign today to rush his security guard and other members of his team to a hospital after they were injured during a morning engagement with police. According to Wine, a police officer named Cato, who was attached to his security team by the Electoral Commission, was injured by a bullet as police fired to disperse his supporters in the Kayunga district. Journalist Catherine Nambi tells us Wine transported his bodyguard to the nearest health center before returning to the trail. Scores of other people were injured during the crackdown and rushed to hospitals. Security agents also fired at Wine's car with what appeared to be a tear gas canister. Yesterday, two of Wine's supporters died after they were allegedly knocked down by a police vehicle trying to disperse them. Police say they are investigating the incident. Wine, who is running against longtime President Yoweri Museveni in January's election, has encountered a series of battles with security officers since the start of his campaign. Catherine Nambi tells us that today, Wine said he would suspend his campaigning until the Electoral Commission explains the constant security blockade on his events. The killing of 43 farm workers at Zabaramari village in Nigeria's northwestern Borno state has shocked the nation. Suspected Boko Haram militants attacked the farm workers on Saturday as they worked in their fields about 40 kilometers to Maiduguri, capital of Borno state. Dr. Abubakar Sani is a public affairs analyst based in Maiduguri. He spoke to reporter Mike Mbonye about the attack and what may have caused it.
This incident, I am assuming they should be ISWAP faction of the terrorists because they are the ones who are, you know, operating within that very that terrain. We were told that the locals there, I don't know if whether it was the farmers, but people who were residing in that very particular area apprehended one of the amirs or commanders of the insurgent and, you know, killed him on Thursday or so. So it's like more or less a retaliatory attack on the farmers. That is why some of us have been advocating, pleading with locals not to take the laws into their hands, not to, you know, get into this fight. They can volunteer credible intelligence to the security agencies, but to say they will go to the extent of fighting them, killing them, I think it might be counterproductive. This is exactly what we're seeing now. And this is like the second time something like this is happening. Either in June or July, I cannot really recall. It happened in Gubbio, where the locals killed a terrorist, and before you know it, they came back, they killed people there. Till 70 or 78 or so. That was the figure that was released as of that very time. Secondly, they did this because they are losing ground. And it is now very difficult to attack military formations. The Air Force is releasing fire on them. The MNJT of Chad is equally doing it. So the news that has been coming out from the mainstream media is not really palatable to them. That is why they just get a soft target, these very people. They killed them, they massacred them. Now they are trending on Al Jazeera and so on and so forth. And you know, terrorism thrives with propaganda and the media. So that's why they did that. They need something that will make people to know that they are still relevant.
What will be the likely effect of the killing on agriculture in Borno State?
Honestly, this very attack would negatively affect agriculture, farming in particular. A lot of people will be scared about going to farm, although I was told that the farmers did not get clearance to go into the hinterland to go and farm. Under normal circumstances, people go to their farms without getting any clearance. But, you know, these are trying times. So we are told they were not given clearance. Well, whether they need clearance or not, this incident will affect farming, which will in turn affect food production in Borno State and in the entire Northeast.
Do you think there should be a change in policy and strategy in the fight against insurgency?
Well, I think there is need to overhaul this strategy and this policy of the super camp option of fight against insurgency. But I know the military are on top of the situation. Of recent, they just came up with another strategy called Operation Fireball, which, if you've been following the battle in the Northeast, you will discover has gone a long way in decimating the insurgents. But this is guerrilla warfare. You come up with this tactics, they re-strategize and come up with another one. So the military should equally, you know, rejig, you know, not necessarily change. They should rejig their strategy, intensify the offensive approach, and as I've said earlier on, collaborate more with the civilian JTF and the locals. And I think with that, we'll see results.
That was Dr. Abubakar Sani, public affairs analyst in Maiduguri, Nigeria. He spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye. The United Nations is appealing for a record $35 billion to provide a humanitarian lifeline to 165 million of the world's most vulnerable, needy people in 56 countries in crisis. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
UN Humanitarian Chief Mark Lowcock calls the crisis gripping the world one of the bleakest and darkest ever experienced by a huge slice of humanity.
That is a reflection of the fact that the COVID pandemic has wreaked carnage across the whole of the most fragile and vulnerable countries on the planet, those where humanitarian organizations are most involved in their day-to-day work.
Lowcock says this disaster comes on top of escalating and protracted conflicts and increasing extreme weather events, including storms, floods, and drought due to climate change.
Those two things together now with disease outbreak, are what has caused this huge increase over recent years in the number of people who may not survive in the absence of humanitarian assistance.
The United Nations reports 235 million people globally will need humanitarian assistance and protection in 2021. This is an increase of 40% in 1 year. This past year has been particularly difficult. The number of people displaced by conflict in 2020, both as refugees and internally displaced, has reached a record high of 85 million. UN agencies report extreme hunger is surging globally, with several countries and areas on the brink of famine. Four that are most at risk include Yemen, Burkina Faso, South Sudan, and northern Nigeria. Lowcock says the COVID-19 crisis has plunged millions of people into poverty and sent humanitarian needs skyrocketing. While the rich world can see the light at the end of the tunnel, he says the same cannot be said for the poorest countries. He is appealing to the humanity and generosity of international donors to safeguard the lives of those who cannot fend for themselves. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A commission of inquiry into corruption in South Africa has seen heated exchanges between a key witness and a lawyer representing former President Jacob Zuma and his allies. The country's ex-finance minister, Pravin Gordhan, claims Zuma and other government officials stole billions of rands from state enterprises between 2009 and 2018. In South Africa, the corruption has become known as state capture. Darren Taylor reports.
Citizens were hoping the showdown between the former finance minister and Zuma's lawyer, Dali Mpofu, would reveal compelling evidence of the ex-president's and his associates' corruption. Instead, it often degenerated into aggression between the two men, like when advocate Mpofu accused Gordhan of lying.
You don't know the importance of taking the oath before God?
I affirmed right at the beginning of this proceedings, Chairperson. I'm not sure what Mr. Mpofu is pursuing here. What else does Mr. Mpofu want?
I asked the questions here, Mr. Gordhan. You are just a witness. So just chill and wait for the question, okay? I'm saying to you...
The confusion was exacerbated by Gordon's testifying via video link on the advice of his doctor. At one stage, he commented that Mpofu appeared to be hard of hearing. The lawyer used this to suggest that Gordhan, who is of Indian ethnicity, was a racist.
You have no right to say I'm hard of hearing, okay? I'm not your child or your pickney, so you must not treat me like that. I'm not one of those Africans that you can undermine. Don't even think about it.
Zuma and his allies claim Gordhan has implicated them in graft, because he's an arrogant racist and jealous of their success as black Africans.
In terms of the rhetoric used, Advocate Mpofu clearly achieved the success of planting the seed in people's minds that there is evidence for racism.
Angelo Fick is a political analyst at the Awal Socioeconomic Research Institute.
It isn't clear that that necessarily would stand any kind of legal test. One would have to ask, how does one in an official judicial process prove jealousy and or arrogance?
He says by using words such as pickanin, a derogatory term for a black child, Zuma's lawyer undermined his own efforts to show that Gordhan was motivated by racism. A previous commission chaired by Judge Robert Nugent has found that Zuma appointed his political ally, Tom Moyane, to head the South African Revenue Service. Under Moyane's leadership, said the commission, billions of rands of taxpayer money disappeared. Gordhan says Moyane orchestrated the corruption, which his lawyer disputed.
You have no evidence that Mr. Moyane was part of state capture?
No, I do.
You do? Good.
Yes. You might want to look at the report of the commission chaired by Judge Nugent.
No. If I were you, I would stay away from the commission chaired by Judge Nugent.
You are not me, would you?
Yes, I'm not you. Thank God.
Fick points out that Gordhan and Mpofu have been the best of enemies since the 1980s, when they were anti-apartheid activists.
So all sorts of disputes over the decades will have come to bear. While they both deny that there are interpersonal conflicts at work here, it is obvious to any dispassionate observer the asides dropped by Advocate Mpofu to object to what he, you know, continued to report on as the racism of Mr. Gordhan, Mr. Gordhan's arrogant Jupiterian approach to answering the questions. This was not a
both men, says the analyst, allowed their mutual dislike to influence their behavior at the inquiry. The casualty, he adds, is a significant part of the truth about the corruption that investigators say flourished during the Zuma years. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
The Voice of America's global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
And your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help.